Excellence at the end of the day is when you stop to compromise. And where you're an excellent human being, you cannot be a racist, you cannot be an anti-Semite.
So I'm Johnny Moore, and I'm joined with Archbishop Joseph D'Souza. He's from India, I'm from the United States, and on Babel Undone, we have interesting conversations with interesting guests, from religious leaders to business leaders, political officials, and all kinds of other people. What unites all of them is that we're having deeper conversations about the topics you're already thinking about. Welcome to Babel Undone. Bishop D'Souza, what's our subject today?
We're going to look at the issue of addressing modern forms of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism has been on the rise before, during, and after the October 7th attacks in Israel. We have seen this throughout the Middle East, in cities across Europe, and on college campuses across the U.S. Covert forms of anti-Semitism have been hiding in the shadows for decades, and now Jew hatred has again become overt, and the hatred has grown more mainstream. The good news is that there are amazing organizations working to overcome anti-Semitism. They're pushing back on disinformation, challenging world leaders to get their act together, and demonstrating a better world is possible. Today we get to speak to the CEO of one such organization.
His name is Sacha Dhradwa. He's a friend of mine. Personally, I've known him for some time. He serves as CEO of the Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. We call it CAM most frequently. His fight against anti-Semitism was inspired by his own grandparents, who were Holocaust survivors from Belgium. And it has led to his lifelong commitment to make sure that anti-Semitism is on the retreat in our world, even now as it's on the ascendancy. He grew up in Brussels, but he moved to Israel after facing anti-Semitism himself in Europe. And he helped establish in Israel, in effect, a digital warfare unit that earned global recognition in order to fight misinformation campaign from anti-Semites all over the world. He is an entrepreneur who launched a company. He's led digital advocacy for the World Jewish Congress. He has done so much. What unites it all is a determination to make sure that the world he hands to his own children is different than the one that he experienced, and especially that his grandparents experienced. And so he does it now through a coalition of 850 organizations united under the banner of the Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. And he's with us now. Sacha, I always like to begin these conversations with a very, very simple question, and you can answer it however you like. Our audience may not know you, as I know you and as the CAM community knows you. And so here's the question, very simple. You can be as practical, as metaphysical as you want to be. Who is Sacha?
It's kind of a simple question, but it can be very difficult to answer.
It's the point.
Who I am, I always say I'm a citizen of the world. I'm living in this place. I belong to this place. I'm a part of this world to make it better with my own belief, my own history, and my own background. And I try to understand why we are here. This is where I am. Really, it sounds very large, very big, but this is where I start my journey, by trying to understand what is my place in this world. And I use the time that I have in this world to accomplish something, and not to stay in the book of history, but to leave something that will be after myself that made it better. I'm looking at what my parents gave me and what I received from them, and I'm thinking always what I'm going to give back to my children, and they will need to give back to their children, and so on and so forth. And I think that if everyone can think like that, we can make the world better for everyone. But that's on the philosophical way. And as a Jewish person, we have a lot to give in the world. We have seen a lot through history. The history is one of the most important, element that Jews have. Because someone told me very, very basically, a simple question, it's a simple sentence. You can take everything from someone. Their money, their house, you can take everything. You cannot take their history, their value, and their religion. So I'm living with that, to know that everything that is material can be taken from me, but everything that is me which is not material, cannot be taken from me, and I have the responsibility to work with it. So this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. But on a pragmatic matter, I'm a Jew that lives in Israel, who grew up in Europe, who have decided to be engaged in fighting anti-Semitism, fighting anti-Western values and ideology in the world, and doubling down on the Judeo-Christian values that build the world that we are living in today, and that we are very proud of it. It's not perfect, and we all know that, but it's the best that we have today, and we should protect it very much, because this is the values of family, of education, of innovation, and everything that we are living into this world is a part of our Judeo-Christian values that we brought the world to a certain level that we need to continue to fight for it.
Wow, it's so good to hear from you, Sacha. You have a family, just for my interest?
Yes, I have a wife, first of all. We're married. Three kids right now, 3 months old, 3 years old, and 5 years old. So at home is intense.
Congratulations. Yeah, interesting, interesting stage of life. Sacha, yes. When we use the word modern anti-Semitism, yes. A lot of people don't understand it. What is this referring to? And how do you see this expressed? What do you see the signs of modern anti-Semitism in our day? And what is it that you're trying to combat?
Yes. So it's a very good question. And I think that we have recently the best example of modern anti-Semitism coming from an international institution, the ICC, which puts warrant arrest against the Prime Minister of Israel and the Minister of Defense, which is an anti-Semitic double standard decision of the ICC. And I think that if you try to understand what is modern anti-Semitism, is it about using international and even local authorities to condemn Israelis for defending themselves because they are Jews. Now, it's not because, like, if you have, like, let's change the narrative here in Israel. If Israel was not a Jewish state, do you think that Hamas will have attacked it on October 7th? I believe that not. If Israel was not a Jewish state, do you think they will have put on ICC list? Probably not. And this is what Nathan Sharansky called double standard, a double standard going against everything that is Jewish or Israeli. Is the delegitimization, the double standard, and demonization of Jews. When you see what, you can look at the demonstration, the pro-Palestinian demonstration, you see the effigies of the Prime Minister of Netanyahu. You can be for him or not for him, it's just an analysis. They try to portray him as a demon of the world. They try to portray him as the worst thing that the world has created. And this is the modern form of anti-Semitism, because it's not accepted to do that against Jews. You cannot go and say all the Jews are bad, but you can say all the Zionists and the Israelis are bad, because right now they have succeeded, the other side, to build a very effective campaign to be accepted to be an anti-Zionist, an anti-Israeli person. And the war is going with that. Now, the most interesting part, I believe, last week I looked at the history of legal system using anti-Semitism or using legal tools to develop and deploy anti-Semitism in their countries. And you have examples from ancient history to modern history. But more recently, 80 years ago, even a bit more, the Nuremberg Law by the Nazis, they used legislation, legal tools, to take the rights of the Jewish people. And it continued in Hungary, in Bulgaria, in Romania. They just deploy laws, the Vichy regime in France. These are legal tools. So it's not because you deploy a legal tool that seems to be legal to be an anti-Semite that it makes you right. And today we have international institutions, the UN, the Human Rights Council, and this is the modern form of anti-Semitism. They are using legal system to be publicly, in a legal way, an anti-Semite. This is what the ICC did, and the UN is a very good example. When in 1975, they passed this resolution of comparing Zionism to racism, it was a modern form of anti-Semitism, and they tried to build a legal resolution at the UN to pass it. So this is more, and I will say the last part of what is modern anti-Semitism is the focus on Jews as a problem of the world. When you go today in the, I would say, the progressive movements, everything that is wrong, they blame on Jews. This is modern form of anti-Semitism. Now they exclude the Jews also for being a part of these movements. And it's the obsession, I think, that if we need to change the definition that Sharansky gave on the 3D that I spoke about, I will add 3D plus O. The O is the obsession. There is an obsession if you go in the news about Israel, about what's happening in the Middle East. It's always there. I don't know why it's so an interest for them, but you have conflict leading to the murders of many, many more people. Recently, there was a bombing attack in Pakistan killing thousands. No one cares. The world is not in a good shape in Africa. You have Christians killed every day by hundreds, and no one deals with them. So when I'm looking at this, the status of the modern form of anti-Semitism, obsession is one on Israel is one of the worst form, because it's every day. You can go in the US in the street, they speak about that all the time. And now the last part of your question was what we try to do. First, we try to build a shield for the Western world. It's not about Jews, and we all know that. Is about the Judeo-Christian values attacked, under attack these days, and we need to protect ourselves. So we try to build shields of relationship with Christian communities, with other minority groups of all forms, to be sure that they understand that we are all together in this, because it starts with the Jews but never ends with the Jews. Now I have to say something changed in 2024. This time, Jews will not be the last to leave. They will be the first to leave. We have learned from the past, and I spoke to my family in Europe, to my friends in Europe. It's time to leave, because if the Europeans cannot fix their democracies and they cannot build a shield for the Jewish community, we shouldn't be the victims again. And I think this is the change that we haven't seen in the history, that we cannot take the blame on ourselves again. We lost 6 million of our people because we believe that we can fix it. We believe that is the danger of Nazism is not so big, so we can survive it, and we fail. I think the danger of radical Islamism, the big radical Islamism today, is the same than, it could be the same, so I don't want to be misquoted, if we don't interfere when it's still time, and now it's still time. So we try to make sure that the world is aware that we have a time of opportunity and a window of opportunity to join forces, to build legislation, to protect our democracies. I think that one of the most complicated sentences in this world is how do we protect a democracy from hatred? And I don't know that anyone has an answer, but protecting a democracy, it's a very tough job that all leaders have. So we try to tell them, protect your democracy from anti-democratic beliefs, religions, or ideologies. You just need to find a way to do it, because we're not going to be the last one this time.
Yeah, I think, you know, this point of you know, using the legal system in order to promote you know, anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism. I think, as I know you do, that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, but it is about the whole West. I mean, it isn't, you know, what's happening with the ICC. If this is tolerated, then, you know, adversaries to the Western democratic, say, Judeo-Christian world, because that's where all those democratic values came from philosophically, like, it will come after everyone. And, you know, and I think that's the point. Like, we should stand up for the Jewish community. We should fight anti-Semitism because it's the right thing to do. And we should also recognize that what begins with the Jews never ends with the Jews. And I have, Sasha, I have so many Jewish friends, as you know, like, all around the world. Most of my Jewish friends don't, you know, don't wear kippahs. But, like, I've been to so many kosher restaurants and places like that, you know, in Europe these days, where, like, everyone brings a ball cap because they fear walking on the streets. Like, and Europe, you know, like, there is no excuse here. Like, all these systems, I mean, the ICC was set up as a post, you know, part of the post-war era in order to make sure this stuff doesn't happen again. And yet it's being so, you know, so profanely used. I mean, you think, you know, and what about Assad? Like, was he ever called to the ICC? What about the Ayatollah? Has he ever been called to the ICC? Like, the hypocrisy is unbelievable. And yet you guys are on the absolute front lines of fighting this. And I think it'd be great to just hear a bit of what CAM is doing, lessons that you've learned, what's been effective, and particularly how non-Jews, wherever they live in the world, our audience is global. People listen to this all over the world, from Africa to South America to Europe and the United States, and of course, Bishop in India. But how can people help based upon what you've learned? Because you guys have been so incredibly effective.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. So I think at first it's a complicated question because we haven't succeeded really to prove that we know all about and antisemitism is on the rise. Now we exist for the past 5.5 years and we have demonstrated that we can do things differently. But I think that first is the reach out to communities. If we all believe, and that's an assumption, that we belong to this world and we need to make it better to protect our democracy, our Judeo-Christian values, so we need to reach out to each other. We need to be able to give a call to your neighbor, to the church, to the synagogues, and to meet, to speak, and to make sure that Jews and Christians learn about each other more. You are one that does that. So I know that you do it, but not everyone are doing this. And I think that this is the first stage that we try to develop, is a strategy and a culture of approaching your allies to make sure that they hear you and that you hear them, that you can also advocate for them and they can advocate for you. If we believe that our ideology are aligned, which they are, so then we have no reason why not to support each other. That's the first step. I think that if this first step is implemented, then you have the second step, which is going to friendship. Friendship is the best shield of everything. The friendship is on the one-on-one base, but then is on a leadership base. I think the leadership base of the friendship is something that needs to be a bit more evaluated and understood. But people like you, as faith leaders, you are friends and leaders. And I think that the friends and leaders are the ones to make the world better. You have on your side, Johnny, and I know that well, some very important rabbis that you're working with, that have an impact in their community. So it's a leadership relationship that is based on an early friendship that we should travel and we should work more in these directions globally. And if you have people in India, in the United States, it doesn't matter. There are Jews in India. They need to hear the voices of the Christian community of India to see, yes, we are here with you. And I have to say online, I see a lot of Indians coming to us, the Israelis, saying that we are supporting you. And that's make me feel very, very well. And I know that if one day Indians' friends will ask me in return to support them, I will do it immediately because I hear their voice. It's one of the big reproaches that I have from the post-October 7th to a lot of our friends in the African-American community that didn't reach out. And they didn't came to us after the shock that we went through to say, what do you need? I will have to tell immediately what I need. Just speak out. Go there. Go to the synagogue. Go to meet the JCC, the Jewish community, and do that to here. Then, yeah, no, tomorrow they will ask me, no, there is a big racist incident. Will I stand up the same way that I would have done before because they didn't reach out to me? In general, the answer is no. In my mind, I will say I will do it twice more because now I need to prove myself even more that we are on the good side of history, so I will do it. But it's a lesson. So you want us as partners and friends, you need to stand up. That's the first part. The second part is working with legislators. I think that legislators are keen to make the world better. This is why they are in place in public servants. They want to see a better world. Now, they're not always equipped with the education they need to be able to do their job properly. So we see in our work a big responsibility in educating the legislators to make sure they travel to Israel, they see what's happening here, that they know the Jewish community, how they feel, how they behave, they meet the student on campus, so they can learn exactly how is the feeling to be a Jew on campus these days. And then they will come to the conclusion of what is the best legislation to do, hopefully. So making sure that those that are responsible to protect our world know about what's happening in the world. And I will say every type of groups, and here we're speaking to Christian, if you feel that you're not heard enough by your legislators, bring your story to them. Invite them to your church, invite them to your community, bring the victims of your community in different hate crimes that they've been going through to them because they're not always aware. It's not that are bad or against you. So we do a lot of efforts to educate them. That's the second part. The third part is finding the grassroots leaders. I think that the grassroots leadership, with the change of communication, and we see how Trump won the elections. He won the election not because he went in CNN and New York Times. He won the elections because he went to the what we call the alternative media. I call it, I think that Elon Musk is calling the new media of the people or the people media. But humans want to be heard. And you have like grassroots leadership everywhere, online, offline, in the streets. But it's not the natural the past 50 years leadership that we have seen. So we're going there. We're going to podcasts like this one because we know that this is where people trust. People can do their own research today. They have access to ChatGPT, to Google. They can find any information, so they can build their own opinion. And people don't want to be told exactly what to think, like the regular media has been used to do in the post-World War II. And right now we are in a new world, so I think that we need to be a part of this new world to be with the local leader. So this is kind of what we do. And I will say the other part is not to compromise. Many, many people have compromised for the sake of the progressive ideologies, for different movements that we kind of, yeah, it's a good idea, good sentiment, but we don't believe. Right now, we have stopped compromising. And I think that if everyone can stop compromising on their ideology, the way of looking at the world, because if we know that we're doing way great and we are a good human, so we should probably stop compromising on who are the immigrants coming to our countries, what they bring to us, and to make sure that we build a world of excellence. Because excellence at the end of the day is when you stop to compromise. And where you're an excellent human being, you cannot be a racist, you cannot be an anti-Semite. So we're pushing for a good education and a high-level education system where you don't compromise anymore. And you need to be educated by excellence. And the last point is, especially in today's internet revolution that we see with AI tools, the ability of excellence is the one that will save the world. If not, you can be replaced, and no one wants to be replaced by the machine. So be excellent, you're gonna be never replaced. Now, you want to survive this world, you need to be an excellent human being in everything you do, and then you cannot be an anti-Semite. So we're working on education project about Jewish heritage in America, but it's all about a vision of excellence. People needs to be good, and to be good, you need to be educated. So making sure that our university systems are very, very well equipped, and we see that they are not. Just look at how who's been accepted in universities and how it looks like in America. In Europe, is a bit different, I have to say. Yeah, and I think the last point is to look at it globally. It's not an American problem. It's not a European problem. Hatred is traveling. We compare a lot to COVID-19. It was everywhere like a virus. So anti-Semitism is a virus. It goes from a place to another one. It has mutations. So it's a global thing. So we really try to be global to identify when it starts, when you have new trends, to anticipate the next action item for us to take.
Sacha, you a couple of times have used the phrase Judeo-Christian values and Judeo-Christian world, to which both of us belong,
Yes.
and Johnny belongs. And the problem of anti-Semitism and the targeting of Israel is not just a localized problem, in that it is an attack from extremist Islamism on Judeo-Christian civilization. I have no doubts about that. Not all Muslims, but extremist
Yeah,
Islamism.
please.
It's an attack they want to dismantle. The problem that we are confronting, and you lived in Europe and you saw this, is that somehow extremist Islamism has been able to co-opt the progressive Western left totally into their agenda. So what you see with the ICJ and all of that is a co-option and a change of mind. You just wonder, how can those jurists sitting there come up with this kind? Because it's not fair. Anybody watching it, as Johnny said, you never do something about Assad, you never do something about Khamenei, but you pick up Netanyahu. This is not a fair level legal place. And you using the juristic system, has the Judeo-Christian world been silent too long and allowed the progressive left, which has been co-opted into extremist Islam, to go on with their agenda? So does that form part of your movement's agenda? How do we change the whole conversation? The progressive left right now is all worried about the Muslim immigrants and the violent Muslims in Germany and everything, what's their future and all. But it's a problem they have created. It's not a problem that came uninvited. But how do we reach out to all these people who may not have faith, but still they are there and they have freedom of expression because of Judeo-Christian values?
Yes, it's a good notion and good question. So I will start with the notion, and I've been thinking a lot about this progressive radical Islamism connection that doesn't make sense, and kind of I try to understand why it works so well together. And I understood at the end of the day that extreme progressive ideology is a kind of a very extreme religion, because you reject everything that is not like you, exactly like Islam rejects everything that is not like radical Islamism, right? So then you find that in the rejection of others, they find a common ground. They can reject Jews because they are allowed to reject what doesn't behave like them. And you go in the Christian religion, you go in the Jewish religion, it's not the same way. You can have conversation, you debate the history, you have conversation about your values, about your religion, about the text, about the books, and you debate, and it's a big part of the values that we have that lead to democracy. So this is the first point. They found themselves in just rejection of others. Now, I think the world has been changing. I don't know if I need to reach out to everyone, but if you look at what happened in Amsterdam a few weeks ago, and you see a pogrom against Jews in Amsterdam. Now, most of Dutch people are still Christian, and when they look at that, I think they're asking them some questions, and I don't need to tell them which question to ask. They're looking about which type of country they want to have, and this is why you see a change in the political games. This is why you see in France, Marine Le Pen being the second largest party. You have the second largest party in Holland, which is also different. In Hungary, in the United States, you have the comeback of Trump, which is a result of America not be satisfied with a progressive Democratic Party. So I think that the world starts understanding that there is a problem to fix. We hear more and more in voice, and even we take a business leader with 200 million followers like Elon Musk that starts speaking about that. You see a lot of change in people's mind. They start realizing that, yes, and I have to say the base on what is built progressive ideology, it's a nice base. We accept everything, we deal with everything. It's a nice value, yeah, okay, right? Why not? But then when you go a little bit deeper, you realize that is not good. You need to have a structure in a society. You need to have a compass that guides you. And this is what the Judeo-Christian value of Bill is, a compass and a direction of what is a world of justice and compassion, right? Of human dignity. And people realize that, yes, we need human dignity. You need compassion, and you need to have a compass and a direction. And I think that it was missing from the debates in the past years. And you see a lot of billionaire people like Bill Ackman, that was a Democratic guy, very open, very progressive. He started saying, oh, pop, I'm attached to my values. I grew up in a certain world. I thought that you're going to accept all of me, as a Jew. And then they start realizing, no, we are not accepted in that. So this is where we see the change. And I think that the more we can debate that, present that to platforms, this is where people will realize. And that's a part of the previous conversation that we started about how you protect our democracies, is first to make people realize that we need to have a compass in our society to dictate where we go. And if we know where we go, that is based today on the Judeo-Christian values, I think that we can be a very strong society, and people start realizing that. So we're working a lot in Latin America, for example. We have their friends, incredible friends. We don't hear about them in the media, but they believe that we need to make the world better. They believe that they need to be with us. So I don't think everything is lost, because our work is to work with allies, and we find allies everywhere. They don't get the spot on the mass media. They are not interesting for CNN, for sure. But they exist, and these are big communities, millions across the world, that really believe that what we have achieved all together, it's good. And we should protect it. So, I'm not a pessimist in this case.
Yeah, and I don't think you should be a pessimist. I mean, the good news is that we are seeing these very powerful alliances on the right side. I mean, for like very conservative evangelicals in the United States of America to be aligned with lifelong liberal Democrats, and what brought them together politically, among many things, was a concern for the Jewish community, and I think you see that all around the world. And so, hopefully, there are more of us than there are of them. And you know, Sasha, I think you and I are in the same generation, and I can just tell you, I'm not handing this crazy world to my kids. I'm going to fix it if it depends upon me, and I know you feel the same way. Unfortunately, we could talk to you for for hours, but we're out of time. But you have given us a pile of wisdom in a short conversation, and we thank you for joining us.
Thank you for that. It's a pleasure to be in this podcast, and I look forward to be in touch.
Bishop, we talk about anti-Semitism a lot in this podcast, and so like why do we do that? And I think what united our original vision for Babylon Done, aside from like the theological passion that we have, is we're human rights activists. We're concerned about democracy. We're concerned about religious freedom. We're concerned about all of these democratic values, which are actually Judeo-Christian values. And there is a direct line between hatred of the Jewish community, between anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, and the deconstruction of the post-war human rights infrastructure. And I don't know, I think in our first week of recording, you know, an episode, we talked about anti-Semitism, and here we are, you know, I don't know how many episodes we've had now, and it's like getting worse. Like, we have to do something about this.
Very much so. And that was the thought that was going on in my mind. I'm very happy for what Sacha is doing. And we need to be a lot more proactive than we have been as a global community, as a Judeo-Christian global community. And I think part of the problem that has hurt us, because I just wonder, how did these guys get an open space, a free play, the progressive left, to be co-opted by the extremist Islamist groups? I think part of the reason, which is now, as he said, we are seeing some change in the U.S., when the Ackermans and the Musks and others are beginning to speak out, has been our silence, the Judeo-Christian silence of decades. So when somebody like Jordan Peterson, who's got such a mass, and he believes in the Judeo-Christian values, and he may not define himself like Christians would, but when he raises his voice, it becomes global. Unfortunately, so far, the voices that have been heard have been only the progressive left, whether it's the Noam Chomsky guy who has lost his voice, or many others, even from the Jewish left, who actually are anti-Semitic themselves. So it's time that the voices, sane voices from around the world, are heard, and they're heard from every continent. We need to figure out how to get some of our Latin American brothers into this podcast.
Yeah, we'll do that for sure. And what alarms me is that I see this anti-Semitism popping up in like very unexpected places. Like, you know, I was in, I'm not going to give the details, but I was in one of the top universities in the world just recently. We're having a conversation about faith and tech, you know, something I'm interested in, something we also talk about in this podcast. And I'm sitting around a table, and this like this guy from another very, very elite institution decides to describe the power of Silicon Valley as being tech Zionism. Like, it was a total anti-Semitic trope. He was like, you know, it's the anti-Semitic trope that the Jews are in charge of the world and all this stuff. And I just like couldn't believe I was witnessing this in front of my eyes. It's not like some, you know, Islamic extremist that grew up in a village and, you know, some country with Al Qaeda or ISIS or something. Like, this is like, this guy worked at the highest level, had the highest credentials, worked at one of the most elite institutions, and we were having a meeting in another one. And he could say that? Like, it's just crazy. But Sasha gave us a lot of things. Like, don't compromise. I thought what he said about the what aligns the far, far left, you know, with the Islamist extremists. And of course, we're not talking about all Muslims. You know, I spend as much time with Muslims you do as anybody, doing a lot of good around the world. But what unites those two extreme groups is that they reject everything, including the Jews. And then the scariest part of the whole conversation we had, I think, Bishop, was when he said, hatred, including the hatred of anti-Semitism, is like a virus, and it spreads and it mutates. And I think that's a warning to all of us who care about protecting these values, protecting democracy, and handing a better world to our kids.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in, .plus.